everybody. This is Adam Stewart. I'm just trying to see if you guys can hear me because I'm calling from Hawaii. I don't know if you guys can hear me or not.
We hear you loud and clear.
Oh, there you are. There you are. And, Paul, you're there, too?
I sure am.
Oh, well, welcome, everybody. Then I guess we're live and we're on. Welcome back to Awaken Life. Yeah, this is kind of a fun show because calling in from Hawaii to continue our discussion on, what is awakening. Like the past few weeks, we've been talking about waking up and showing up. And so just to continue this discussion about awakening. But anyway, man, how's the weather back there, Paul?
Hey, sun is out today, man.
It's cold. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's chilly. Now, what island are you on?
Well, I'm on Kauai.
Yeah.
So,
what's the temperature there?
Oh, gosh, it's like 80 degrees. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
I had to take a break from doing absolutely nothing so I could host the show today.
Nice. That's the way we like it.
But, you know, and it was funny because, Paul, you and I were talking about, you know, are we going to do the show when you're there? And I thought, you know, how fun. What a fun thing to do while I'm here. So I'm glad that. I'm glad we were able to get the call path through and everything.
Well, I'm wondering if you've had some insights hanging out in Hawaii.
Well, to be honest, yeah. I mean, you know, have you ever been here before, Paul?
Oh yeah, love that place.
Yeah. So you know, it's an inspiring kind of place, you know, and the people here really get it. You know, we talk about awakening every week. Well, they really get it here. I mean. There's a beauty that inspires sort of a natural trust, you know, that things the universe knows what it's doing.
That's true.
You know, it feels like the sand has been just prepared for millions of years to feel just perfect, you know, on your feet. So, and I was thinking too, like I was outside, and it's like the flowers have been perfecting themselves for about the same amount of time, and it's just to be seen by us today. The divine mystery sort of bears her skin a bit more out here, and her hula skirt is a bit short, you could say.
Well, it sounds very inspirational.
Yeah, it's hard not to be inspired, you know, when you're sitting in this kind of place. I mean, and especially, you know, it reminds me of what we've been talking about so much. I mean, it's like, like I said, I mean, it's just like the people out here, they just get it. You know, they're really tuned in. It also feels like time is not as much of a concern out here, you know, so.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. So let's get back to talking a little bit about awakened mind. Let's start by defining our terms for the folks who haven't been listening last week and haven't read your book.
Sure, sure. Well, I like the idea that, you know, like we said, and the way we defined it last week is of this, you know, pure, clear consciousness, right? It's our natural state. It's a depth that isn't, you could say, you know, diluted in any way by our mind or by ego. And so I like that definition. One other thing, though, today that I think we should talk about is that, you know, one of the things that the Buddha, one of the ways that the Buddha defined awakening is as the end of suffering. And so I want to talk about that today, about what that means, you know, to end suffering in our lives, because I think you'd agree, Paul, it's more than just, it's not necessarily the elimination of pain.
Nope, not at all. Pain is the gateway in oftentimes. You know, there's a big distinction we'll get into about what's the difference between pain and suffering. And I think it's worth elaborating what's the difference between just regular, ordinary conscious mind, egoic mind, and what we're defining as awakened mind. You want to riff a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. I think that, the ego is sort of that contracted element of ourselves. You know, it's this fictitious false identity, this thing that we like to, you know, point to and say is me, you know, or mine, And, you know, the awakened mind is there's no limit to it. It's not contracted, you know, it's in a state of perfect openness at all times. And it's our true nature, you know, so it's like if we feel deeply enough into who we are and into our essence, then that's what ends up revealing itself. You know, it's like if you peel the onion, so to speak, you know, of false beliefs, false identification, you know, stories and dreams, which I also think is important to talk about today. You know, we talk about what, you know, awakening is, but then there's this other thing that's not awakening. You know, there's this other experience. And I think that's also what we're talking about in terms of ego. It's this false, it's creating this dream, you could say, in like painting a false version of the way things are, you know, covering up the natural essence of the way things are, which is how, you know, it's perceived when you just look directly at it, you know. And that's really what Zen's all about, and that's part of why we've been talking so much about, you know, Jinpo and Mondo Zen, is because, who, by the way, agreed to come on the show last week. So we don't have him scheduled yet, but I did want to, you know, mention that and thank him for that.
Yes, but that would be fun.
Right. So that was exciting. I told you, Paul, I jumped and did a spin in the air when I got there.
Yeah, that's exciting. He's fun to talk to. He talks about who are you beyond your thoughts and your feelings, you know?
Right,
so it's not
right.
just what's, it's not the thoughts themselves, but what's aware of the thoughts. That's the awakened mind or the pure mind that he describes.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, what he says is it's not something conceptualized, it's visceral. So it's an experience that you're having instead of just something you're thinking.
And that's another way of distinguishing, I think, between the awakened mind and the ego.
Yeah, you know, I've heard it described as the ego is self-contraction. And Adi Da talks about it as the avoidance of relationship, right? So,
right.
And one of the things that can happen when you're in a place like you are, Hawaii is a really feminine energy, yes? And so,
very much so.
Right,
yeah, well, you know, you heard the way I described it. It just feels like, you know, the divine mystery is pulling her skirt up a little bit, you know? It's just so beautiful.
That's fantastic. Yeah, well, it can, you know, when you relax, it just relax into things. The natural beauty can really awaken you to kind of deeper truths about things, give you perspective about your own life, and you can unwrap some of those stories and unravel some of the stories you've been suffering about.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like the way I like to think of it too is it's like things reveal themselves to you as they are. You know, when you let go of the story of what you think it is or what you think it should be, things just reveal themselves to you as they are, you know. So, like, for example, just the feeling of my feet in the sand, you know, today, just the you know, yeah, it's kind of a story, but the feeling of it was it felt like it had been prepared for millions of years just to feel that soft, you know. That was the feeling. I mean, it was more of an inspiration than a thought, you know. It was like, could it be any more perfect?
Well, that's a real gateway into awakened mind is appreciation. That's what my teacher always emphasized. That's the quickest way.
You always thought, I thought about you, Paul, when I was out here. You know, you always emphasized that. You know, just like your teacher and just like my teacher.
Mm. Well, that sounds great. What we're going to do now is go to break. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about what are we awakening from. And so come on back. We'll talk to you soon.
Are you upside down on your home loan and facing foreclosure? Washington's Foreclosure Fairness Act takes effect on July 13th and requires your mortgage holder to grant you a face-to-face meeting to negotiate modifications to your loan that may let you keep your house. More than 5,600 homes were seized in the first 3 months of this year in the state of Washington. Don't let this happen to you. Visit foreclosurefairness.net. That's foreclosurefairness.net. Or call 206-818-9732, your home safety net.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
Kidzen Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Awaken Life, and I'm Paul DeFury. I'm here with Adam Seward. So, Adam, we're talking about awakened mind. Let's talk a little bit about what we're awakening from.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. By the way, good job over there holding down the fort, I have to say.
Yeah, there's more than a little bit of envy happening on the side of the Pacific.
Right, right. Yeah, so, you know, what are we awakening from? Well, you know, we talked a little bit before the break that, you know, the ego is sort of this aspect of ourselves that is not generally aware of the awakened mind, or what we're calling the awakened mind, that, you know, deep, pure, clear awareness, which is ever present. You know, there's never been a time that it hasn't been so. You could say the self or ourself is, you know, lost in the world. That's one way that, you know, Eckhart Tolle likes to talk about it. He says, you're lost in the world. And so that basically means that, you know, you've forgotten who you are. You've forgotten your identity. And, you know, we tend to identify with the physical body, or we tend to identify with our things, situations, so on. And, you know, when we do that, we get tossed back and forth, you know, between these ever-changing state. You know, one of the things the Buddha says that, you know, everything's on fire. It's all temporary in the sense that it's all on fire in the sense that it's temporary. You know, it's not going to be around for long. It's, you know, it's all dissolving, you know. So, but what we do is we attach on to things, you know, as if they're permanent. We invest in them, you know, as if they're permanent. And then when they're not, then we suffer, right? So what are we awakening from? Well, you know, part of it is suffering. You know, the Buddha, you know, he said, well, if you know the story, right? I mean, he saw, you know, a sick person, an old person, a dead person, and a holy man, right? And then he thought, okay, why would a mom ever bring a child into this world? You know, if all you do is basically grow old, get sick, and die. And so he said, you know, I'm gonna figure this out. He sits under the Bodhi tree for, you know, a period of time, and comes up with the Four Noble Truths. What are the Four Noble Truths? Well, number one, life is suffering. You know, two, the root of the suffering is desire or attachment, you could say. And then three, there's a way out. You can wake up from that suffering. And four, here's the way out. And, you know, for him, it was the Eightfold Path. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we awakening from? Well, we're awakening from suffering. And what kind of suffering? Well, the kind that comes from desire and attachment, trying to make the impermanent permanent, essentially. And, you know, that's sort of what the ego's job is. And the number one thing that the ego, you know, is continually working to make permanent is itself, which is the biggest joke of all, because it's not even real. You know, I was walking on the beach yesterday, and I saw a few kids, you know, making sandcastles. And it just struck me immediately, the metaphor. I mean, it's obvious. It's like that's what the ego's doing. That's the ego's world. It's just, you know, it's constructing these, you know, sandcastles, these fantasies, these false identities, these stories about the way things are, and none of them can last for very long because, you know, they're all lies.
That's right. Well, the Dalai Lama always says that everybody wants to be happy. So if you listen to him, always say that when he's having a talk.
Yeah.
And so when we give the ego or the mind, the separate self, this job that it cannot accomplish, you know, yeah. It's fruitless, then it creates a lot of unnecessary suffering. And one of the distinctions, really, people get crossed up because they think the Buddha is telling them not to have desire, and that almost seems like an impossibility.
Yeah.
The real piece they miss is the attachment part, like you're just speaking about.
Right.
It's really, the desire is fine as long as you realize who's having it and don't get attached, so you don't become attached to the outcome. That's like trying to keep the sandcastle, you know, afloat, basically. Intact while the waves are lapping against it. So it's absolutely impossible. Well, and you see people in relationship do this, right? They try to hold it together, and it's pretty much, you know, it's just so doomed from the beginning.
Yeah.
So, well, say more about, we talked a little bit about pain. And suffering. The term in Pali is dukkha, which means really the unsatisfactory nature of impermanence. You know, the everyday life has an no matter, even if it's fantastic, it has a sort of unsatisfactory quality about it. How does pain differ from suffering in the way we're talking about it?
Yeah, well, you know, pain's part of life. You don't escape it, you know, as well as, you know, old age, sickness, and death. I mean, you can't get away from those things, and that's not what awakening is about. You know, awakening is getting away from the suffering, and the suffering, the root cause of the suffering can be pain. We have a tendency, you know, especially in this culture, we give pain a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pain's bad, but no, pain's delicious. You know, if you really feel into it, you know, it's just the, you know, the flip side of pleasure. I mean, it's not something to be run from, but it's when we resist, you know, that's when we start to create the suffering. You know, it's like, you know, pain has a quality to it, a felt, you know, quality, you could say. And you, when you feel into that and you, you know, often in relationship, that's one place that, you know, those wounds can sort of be opened and explored. But, you know, when you feel into it, then it reveals itself for what it is. And it's nothing bad. It's just an energy. And sometimes it means it's an energy that's contracted. You know, it's an energy that's not moving. So it's not bad, so to say, you know, but And it's also much different from suffering, you know. So awakening isn't about, you know, escaping pain. And I think a lot of people misinterpret it as that. I mean, they think, okay, if I wake up, then I shouldn't experience pain. And, you know, they'll meditate endlessly, you know, more as a form of dissociation from the body and from the life experience than a celebration of it or an embodiment of it or an enjoyment of it. So...
yeah,
that's what comes up for me there.
Well, I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'll give you a little sneak preview of what Jumpo will talk about.
Yeah, please.
Well, he's talking about when people, and they've done this forever, sit in a cave and watch their mind. And if you really develop a real discipline around it, you can slow it down so you can see what's happening. And what they say happens is essentially conditions arise, then there's sensing. Then there's a feeling memory, and then there's a body-mind reaction. So stuff, you know, conditions arise. Then you have a sense. You know, we have our senses of it. And sometimes it can be pain, right? But then there's this feeling that you get that you associate from the past. And immediately there's a sort of reactionary pattern that comes from it. And that's based on, you know, our stories and our, you know, cultural conditioning and all that. And so when you slow things down... and you stay present with the purity of really awakened mind instead of that egoic mind, then you have a chance to choose instead of react. So there you actually, there's some freedom there because you can say, okay, I'm feeling this pain. Instead of contracting and running from it or distracting myself from it or trying to project it on all the people we love, instead of doing that, I can be with it and ask myself, what is this about? What can I learn from it? You know, what is it telling me? What real choice do I have? So instead of immediately having this reactionary pattern, you have free choice. And, you know, you're not telling that ridiculous story to yourself. This is happening to me. I have to do this. I can't. There's nothing I can do about it, right?
Yeah, poor me. Woe is me. Sure.
And this is the discipline comes in. That's why we're encouraging folks to spend, you know, either meditate or do some type of contemplative prayer or some kind of quiet time that you give just to yourself.
Yeah.
And this is where you can relax into your, you know, body, into the moment, and the insights start to flow, you know, or go to Hawaii, then it'll happen.
Well, you know, as you were saying that, one of the things that I've done that I, you know, really have encouraged others to do is to find a spot. You know, they say make a spot in your home to meditate and, you know, reserve that as a sacred space for that practice, you know, so that it can accumulate that energy and so on. It's also important to, you know, find a place, a spot to observe the natural world. You know, meditation's automatic for me when I'm sitting on the beach. You know, the tide coming in and out. I mean, the tide breathes for you in that space. You know, and the Zen saying, it's like you can swallow the Pacific Ocean in a single gulp. It, you know, kind of starts to have meaning.
That's it. You know, your awareness is limitless. So, it's a field of infinite possibility. And if you're not experiencing that in your life, then, you know, that's your clue. It's not common experience that you're having every day. Just relax into the bliss of who you are. Then that's your cue. Time to make some time for myself. Find a spot.
Yeah.
And do it, and, you know, create a practice. So do it every day at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
Wear the same thing and have things around you that have meaning, right? Totems and things like that. So creates an energy, creates a habit, creates a pattern that you can drop into. And then during the day, you always have a referent point. You say, no matter how hectic or stressful or whatever, or how personal it seems, you know, that's, you can always drop back into the experience you were just having and relax, take a deep breath, you know, then have choice again. Not bad, right? Well, okay, that's perfect timing.
Speaking my language, Paul,
all right.
As usual.
Oh, excellent. All right, so we're going to go to a break, and when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about letting go and surrender, those two critical aspects of living a free life, an awakened life. So we'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together we have partnered to bring you Awakened Life as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awakened Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting with you.
Listen to the Marie Manucherry Show, where energy and medicine meet, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. It's intelligent and provocative radio. Tuesdays is Boot Camp for the Soul to help you soar. Thursdays, Marie interviews guests from an incredibly talented lineup. To learn more about Marie and her radio show, visit energyintuitive.com or connect with her on Facebook and Twitter. That's the Marie Manucherry Show, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
There's an exciting new astrology hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silberman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silberman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilbermanAstrology.com.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking about awakened mind today. I'm here with Adam Seward. So, Adam, let's talk a little bit about letting go. What does that have to do with awakening?
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking before about, you know, there's the awakened mind, and then there's that, there's something that gets in the way. You know, there's something, call it ego, you could call it the dream or the veil. And then there's also ways to get whatever it is that's in the way out of the way, to reveal more of the truth of that awakened mind, or that, you know, that depth of consciousness. And so letting go is one of those things. And sometimes people would say, you know, letting go of control is a big piece of it, you know. But I want to distinguish, because there's at least two different types of letting go that I hear people talking about, and sometimes I notice that they are misconstrued. You know, one, and I work with this as a counselor, you know, one is letting go of, like, psychological baggage. I mean, that means, like, you know, Eckhart Tolle calls it the pain body. It's just stuff that you've accumulated on your life journey that's sort of piled up that needs to be worked through, needs to be forgiven. And so letting go in that sense, it's more of a clearing process.
Mm.
You know, it could also mean, like, letting go of a resentment that you have towards someone.
Okay.
And that's very important. That does help to release any holding on to or barrier that might be in the way of, you know, resting in the awakened mind.
So it's more psychological in that sense?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's more of a psychological type of letting go.
Mm-hmm.
But the other is more of what I call, you know, letting go of the self. And so, and that's when you were talking before the break, Paul, about choice, and about how, you know, once you sink to a certain point, there, this element of choice comes in, where you literally are choosing to let go of the investment that you have in being, you know, this separate self, you could say, or the, you know, just the investment in the ego and its schemes and its plans and its predictions. I mean, I get a kick out of people who sincerely believe that their ego should be the ultimate authority on the way the entire universe should operate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like letting go of control is like, it's getting real, you know? Like, come on, like, get real. Like, you're there's only so much you can do, you know, as a small self. There's only so much you have control over. A lot of people would say you have zero. You know, it's an illusion that you have any control.
Yeah. Well, I'm in that camp. Which, you know, actually is a big relief.
Oh, gotcha.
You know? See, we try to let the ego drive the bus. That is a bad plan. You know, the proper relationship is that the true self is the master, and your mind is the servant. People go the other way around, right? They try to let the mind, and this is something we've been conditioned to believe, that we kind of fell in love with rationality, it in the modern age, it sort of saved us from a lot of things.
Like
dogma and all kinds of craziness. And so, you know, science seemed to have an answer. And we kind of all grew up to believe, you know, you got to trust your mind. You think of you can think it through and come up with the solution with your mind.
Yes.
Instead of trusting your heart. That seemed a little too, you know, that's too ephemeral, too woo-woo, don't do that. You can figure it out. And then if you don't, weren't smart enough to figure it out. And that's precisely backwards, because your intuitive mind rests in the heart, you know. And then your actual egoic mind and those thoughts and feelings that are rising up naturally, those are there in service of the deep awakened heart that you are.
Mm.
Right? And that's where that's where true choice comes from. And to get at it is the letting go piece. You know, I think a lot about Michelangelo lately. I've been, you know, he was such an unbelievable sculptor. You've probably heard this before, but he had a lot of unfinished sculptures where the figures, they seem like they're just crawling out of the marble, you know. they would give him these enormous pieces. Like this one pope gave him 20 pieces for his own sarcophagus. He never finished them. It was, you know, but... Basically, they asked him, how do you make something like the David? It looks like it's unbelievable. How did you make it so lifelike and it's perfect? How do you sculpt it in that particular way? And he basically shifted the perspective, how he described it. He said, I already see the sculpture in the stone. It's already, I see the image, I see everything. And then I just knock out everything that's in the way.
Yeah.
I just let all the marble out of the way. Just let it go.
That's what letting go is.
And then it reveals itself.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's what letting go is. Getting rid of whatever, you know, anything that's in the way. And I was just kind of getting the image of, you know, him chiseling away at these things and thinking, you know, we were talking about pain earlier. And, you know, pain's just life's way of getting your attention. It's like when something hurts, that's just life's way of getting your attention. It's like, the less you pay attention, the more it tends to hurt.
That's right.
You know, so we are kind of being chiseled away a bit. You know, sometimes I'll use the metaphor of a river. You know, it's like life is asking you to let go, to let the stream take you, but it does have a tendency to bump you into the rocks. It's just sort of the nature of the stream, and that hurts. It's just there's pain, but it's delicious in the sense. I mean, Junpo. This is what Junpo said. He said, why would you want to be liberated from the delicious quality of pain? You know, it's where the learning is. So, you know, letting go does mean letting go of our resistance to pain as well, and allowing that, you know, that to
it has a different
liberate.
Quality. It does have a different quality, doesn't it? When you start fighting it, avoiding it, and actually surrender to it. Well, that's another thought is. That term surrender, because you hear it a lot. I think that's worth kind of unpacking.
Yeah.
So say a little bit about more about that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, surrender, I think, is a good term. You know, it's like the ego, right, there's just this arrogance sometimes that the ego seems to portray. And that can be better than or worse than, you know, anything that makes me special in relationship to you, right? And... Mm-hmm. The idea of surrender is sort of like, you know, okay, you know, at, you know, it's where you just sort of say, you know, the immensity of what's going on here in life, you know, the mystery of it and the beauty of it, it's more than I can comprehend, you know, it's more than I can hold in a conceptual reference point. So I give up, you know, here, I'm going to wave the white flag,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. You let the waters take you, and that's what, you know, we talk about awakened life. Well, it's those waters that move you through an awakened life. You know, it's that current, you could say, that really is the energetic driving force of this life that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the idea, is that you just, you know, this current is very powerful, and you can try to swim for shore, but you never make it. You know,
yeah.
Or you could just lie back and enjoy the ride. And that's the idea. Why are you paddling so hard to shore? Well, you know, just float. So there's
letting go and surrender. I mean, they're really close.
Yeah,
they are. They have different flavors.
Well, and there's also a subtle distinction there, because a lot of people, when they're given that sort of injunction, as it were, to surrender, if their ego gets involved, they'll interpret that to mean more of a sense of resignation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, I give up. Fine.
Sure.
You know, I quit. Yeah. It's not that. I mean, this is kind of a razor's edge we're talking about. But surrender is literally giving yourself, you're just fully allowing everything to have you, basically. Just take me down the river. And it's not like you're giving up.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of surrender. But there is a non-oppositional quality to it. There's nothing that you're resisting, avoiding, fighting against. Right? And so a lot of people say, well, I let go, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Do you know? I hear this in relationship all the time.
I just was going to say, just in relation to what you're saying, is that, you know, the beauty here is very humbling.
Oh, yes.
Like, you know, there's this one particular type of flower that you see everywhere, and I'm transfixed by this thing, and I have no clue what it's called, and I have no interest in knowing what it's called. You know, like, I'm sure it has a name, you know, and I'm sure people, you know, they're like, oh, what's that? I don't need to know what this thing's called. I know more about it just in being with it, you know, than I ever would, you know.
Yes, I hear you. You know, it can detract from the experience. Some people have that when they try to take a picture of this beautiful, you know, the Grand Canyon with their cell phone. It's like, okay, take a few shots, but, you know, you're not going to get the same shot.
Well, and that's the suffering, you know, that's the suffering that's transcended through awakening. You know, it's like you're no longer trying to get the Grand Canyon in your cell phone shot. You know, it's just not going to happen. You're never going to, you know, comprehend the mystery in your tiny, you know, limited mind. It's not going to happen.
But you can, in the moment, fully appreciate it. And, you know, the surrender piece is everything. It's the ego that's being kind of tossed on the fire, as it were. It's allowing itself to, you die to yourself, as it were. You're dying to this false idea and these ideas that you think have it all figured out. They're just partial. There's nothing the matter with them, and they're good to have at times.
Yeah.
But the full surrender, and the same thing in relationship, right? The paradox is when you surrender to your partner, to the relationship itself, that's when you actually become the beneficiary of the thing that, you know, you wanted to get in the relationship. Do you think that's true?
Oh, I do. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like relationship with another person is the same as your relationship with, you know, with everything else. I mean, it's like, you know, if I came here, for example, and thought, you know, I'm gonna tell the ocean what it is, you know, and I'm gonna expect the ocean to move in this way and that way, I'm gonna be very disappointed because it has a life of its own. And I think relationship does too. You know, it's like two people come together and in that sense, that type of relationship, it's like two people come together and, you know, they dance, and, you know, they, you know, if they, you know, love arises, then they do the best they can to kind of correct their steps so they don't step on each other's toes, so that they can, you know, hold that peace and the, you know, the bliss that comes with that. You know, and if not, then it's honored as such, and you don't, you know, you don't try to make it something that it isn't.
Well, that's the key piece.
That's how I think it relates.
That's right. I mean, one of the things you're surrendering is your agenda. Or your future story about what it is you want from it. You know, I read a quote that I thought was pretty insightful. It said, relationships aren't to make you happy. They're to wake you up. That's pretty juicy, right?
Oh, man,
I mean, happiness happens in the surrender, knowing that there's really no matter what you do to control it, it ain't going to cooperate.
That's right.
All right. Well, that brings us to our next break. We'll be back after this. We'll talk a little bit more about the mystery. All right, Adam, don't go anywhere.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can
see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out and I'll lay your ship bare.
At the law offices of Richard D. Seward, we care about our clients. We offer important legal advice and services to help them grow their wealth and protect it. We manage the risks and help the financially distressed through the recovery process. We are committed and dedicated to helping people throughout Western Washington and beyond with our expertise in business, real estate, tax law, and debt relief. Find us at richardseward.com or call us at 360-876-6425. We care about you.
Gidsan Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
No, you're not alone, and it's not just you. The things you're experiencing are actually being felt around the world, and there is something you can do about it. Tune in for It's Not Just You with Lorelei Spiegelman, Susan Wayman, and Siobhan Mitchell, three professional women of wisdom who compare current events and how they offer you insight into your own personal world. Monday morning at 9 a.m.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about awakening and surrender and letting go. And I'm just listening to this Adele song, Adam.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to the lyrics. I love it because there's a hilarious skit on Saturday Night Live where, I don't know if you've seen it, but this girl is listening to Adele and crying, and then all her friends join her and cry to Adele. It's become like this great soundtrack for heartbreak. And the lyrics are fantastic because they're very, you know, there's a lot of drama. And the idea that you had, just in the chorus, it said, you had my heart and you played it to the beat.
Yeah.
Right? So the idea is that she surrendered her heart to him. And by the way, it was actually to her. I found, she said the woman inspired that song, by the way.
Oh, wow.
But she, you know, gave it away, as it were, and then did the surrender, but then is feeling the heartbreak and feels, you know, like we could, you know, feels the regret, feels the pain of loss. We could have had it all and all that, right? It's almost like an argument to say, I lose my heart when I give it to you, and then you play with it. You played it to the beat.
Yeah.
A good way of saying, you know, it actually lacks responsibility at a level, which is to say, You surrender to your heart to someone, do you lose it? Is it actually now not yours? In fact, paradoxically, it's the other way around. As soon as you surrender it, you actually experience it. As soon as you let it go, you experience the love that you are and that you don't then have need from anybody else. So there's no blaming. We could have had,
there's a Mumford and Sons song that says, you know, where was my fault in loving you with my whole heart, you know?
That's right.
And there is no fault, ever.
There's never a fault.
You know, sometimes people, you know, I'll talk to people who are in relationship and they'll say, hey, should I say this or should I do that? And it's just like, you know, you can never go wrong being loving. It's never a mistake to be loving, you know? And for men especially, it's like, we're tempted to kind of live with our hearts guarded. And, you know, part of the awakening, part of an awakened human being is they have a big, open, fiery heart. You know, it's just a characteristic of that. And honestly, you know, for me, my heart fills and breaks. It gets so full, it breaks.
Right. You know? There's, you know, if you've been a parent, your kids will break your heart. Right.
Yeah.
They're designed that way. It's what they'll do. They'll figure out a way to do it. If you fall in love with someone, eventually they're going to break your heart one way or the other. Whether you spend
they're either going to leave you or they're going to die or you're going to die.
That's it. I mean, basically, it's an interesting thing to realize that any direction you go, it's going to break. So why not surrender? Just right? And just let it break open and embrace that. All this, it's juicy.
There's a Rumi poem I heard quoted. You know, he left me, she left me. 1,000 more will come.
Right. Well, the idea for particularly men is they're supposed to know, right? So that's the idea, is that they're supposed to have it all figured out.
Right.
But, you know, when you really fall in love, if you're doing it right, you're going to come to a place where you don't know anything. That's when that's your confirmation. You're in the sweet spot.
That's right.
And so we've talked about awakening mind being don't know mind.
That's right.
It's open. There's not full of stuff.
I don't know about that, Paul.
So let's talk about plunging into the mystery with this kind of beginner's mind.
Well, you know, and love is certainly an area that challenges this, you know, because we want to know, we want to predict, we want to, you know, say what the future is going to be, you know, so often. And it's just our care that, you know, a lot of time inspires that. But, it's, you know, the mystery, I love that term, the mystery, because that's what it is, you know, this adventure we're on. It's like, you know, the less that you attempt to know, to have the answer, to contract around an idea or a belief, the more open you are to the revelation of the truth. And you know, a reality, or, you know, Zen mind, call it what you want, but it, you know, it's something that's revealed, you know, when the mind has let go of its need to know anything. It just goes into an open state. And my sense of it is that, you know, every time I go into that place, you know, truly, you know, or the more I live in that place, I should say, there's always more of the mystery to be revealed. So it's like, in one sense, you know, you get something and you're like, oh, I get that. That's eternal. You know, like there's an eternal sort of flash of insight, you know, that is the Satori, that, you know, you glimpse into that which never changes and has been the same before the Big Bang. And a little bit, another jewel or another piece of that mystery is revealed. So it's like, you know, that's why I like to talk about plunging. And, yeah, no question, I don't know is one of the best ways to get there.
Yeah, I mean, if you already know it, then how can it be revealed to you? How can anything new be revealed to you if you're holding what you already know? And so any good artist will know exactly that, you know, that it, how it comes to them is a mystery, which is what makes it so exciting. Yeah. Their only job is to receive.
You know,
how do you tap into it, Adam? I mean, how do you access it?
Knowing the mystery, you know, like, for example, when you're, you know, looking at a flower, you've got your feet dug into the sand or something like that, you know, it's like knowing it is just, again, it's allowing it to reveal itself to you, you know, and you know, so William Blake, you know, he said, I could see infinity in a grain of sand, you know, or eternity in an hour, right?
Yeah.
That's what reveals itself, you know, it's, you know, the millions and millions of years that have happened to create the beautiful beaches here have all happened within your own being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are even, you know, every wave that's ever crashed on that shore out there, you know, has happened within your being, and it happened for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all been sort of, you know, birthed into being with one purpose, and that's for you to enjoy it. And, you know, you, the cosmic you, the eternal you. But it's interesting because, you know, I was sitting out there last night, you know, in the, you know, just sitting in the sand and the moon and stuff, and I overheard someone talking about, you know, a relationship that wasn't going well for them, and it was, you know, they were just wondering about the person and stuff, and, you know, they weren't in paradise. You know, they were equally in, you know, that place of desire and attachment. It's just so interesting to see that contrast on the same beach, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, and a lot of us, you know, we're sitting, we're all, you know, what the Buddha would say, or what, you know, the idea is that we're all sitting in paradise. You know, wherever you are, you're sitting in paradise. You just, you know, are believing untrue thoughts, or, you know, like we've been talking about for this hour, there's so many different things that we do that just prevent us from seeing that, prevent us from feeling that. So it doesn't even really matter if you just happen to be, you know, if the temperature just happens to be, you know, 72 to 80 degrees all the time, you know, you're still in that place.
Mm, that's beautiful. Reminds me of that Walt Whitman line, in the leaves of grass lie the journey work of the stars, right? Isn't that gorgeous? And the interesting thing about that quote is he wrote it back before we understood about evolution.
Oh,
and
wow.
We understood about the fact that it's actually true what he was saying. He did not know the science behind that. That he didn't know that it is actually the journey work of a star, is a blade
of
grass. But he had an intuition. How else would he know that, to write that?
Exactly.
And everyone to be really resonate with it so that they... You know, they still
It's all self-reflection, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Science is self-reflection. Our Hubble telescope is doing self-reflection.
Well, you know, my favorite story about the Hubble telescope is that one, you know, at a certain point they pointed to a place in the heavens where it was fairly controversial. It's right near the handle of the Big Dipper. And it's basically the place where there's no stars. And they were just like, let's just send the telescope and shoot that area. And it was controversial because they said there won't be anything that comes back. It'll be just dark. And as it turns out, just like when you go out in the middle of the desert and there's a million stars, well, that's what happened there. They've got the most famous picture ever taken, which had just showed that there are actually hundreds of billions of galaxies out there. Oh, what a surprise. In this little black spot in the sky, they saw all these massive spiral galaxies. And that's really what we're encouraging you to do in less cosmic terms.
Yeah.
You know, surrender to the mystery. It means go to the place that scares you, that you don't know, that you're not so sure about.
Yeah.
You know, give some time to silence to what you don't know. And, you know, surrender to that. Relax into it and see what insights you have and what you can shift in your life.
Yeah, and let go of control, you know, surrender a little bit.
Yeah, don't run, contract in the pain. Feel into it and see
I love it. You know, you said let your heart break, right? I mean, that's part of, that's how it opens.
That's what it's designed to do.
that's a deep insight.
Well, all right. Well, that takes us to the end of our hour together. I'm glad you could join us from the beach, my friend.
It was my joy. I'm sad it's over, but I think I could go back to doing nothing for a few more hours.
Oh, my God. I got to go back to work. How beautiful. Same experience.
Well, lots of love to you, Paul, and thanks for, you know, doing the hosting today.
Hey, I was just really happy to share some time with you, my friend.
As always.
All right. Much love to you.
Love to you, too. Bye.